Welcome to Yes Indeed Pod. I'm Mark Shepherd, your host today. This time we're talking to Goblin Archives. Hi there, and welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Would you like to take a minute to introduce yourself and let us know what you do in indie tabletop role-playing games?
Yeah, so I am Goblin Archives. I wrote the game Liminal Horror. I also curate the annotated archive of game design resources that tries to catalog different tweets and blogs that help lower the barrier of entry for new and experienced designers.
Excellent. That's good work.
Yeah. And this month I am, or even over the next couple of months, I'm itch funding an adventure for Liminal Horror called The Mall.
Do you want to give us a little bit of an elevator pitch as to what The Mall is all about?
Yeah. If it was just one sentence, it'd be The Thing, but set in a mall.
Perfect.
But a little bit bigger than that, it's, so The Mall's a wet, gooey, practical effects filled adventure set in a 1990s mall that gets pulled out of time and space.
Ooh.
The mall's denizens are trapped inside with a creature not bound to any one form. It can look like any of them and slithers among them, working its way, trying to assimilate and imitate everyone in there until there's no one left.
Nice. That sounds very creepy. So in terms of like the setting, you're saying that it's set in a 90s mall. Like, what kind of 90s media were you consuming when you were thinking about this mall?
You know, it's just all kinds of 90s media. I was specifically, of course, The Thing, which is 80s media, but that's sort of like
close
was enough. The main touchstone. Umez's The Drifting Classroom, which is a manga, helped inspire sort of the sort of falling out of time and space. And then a more recent thing was Astron 6's The Void, which is a film very similar in tone, I think, but they're trapped in a hospital instead of a mall.
Always more creepy.
Exactly. And so there's sort of this, I grew up in the 90s, and so trying to pull on an era that I felt like aesthetically was just very fun.
Yeah, absolutely. There is something very funny about malls as well. Let me think of malls in horror films. I'm pretty much only coming up with Silent Hill film and Silent Hill 2 video game. And I don't know, like, not Hot Fuzz, but the other one.
Oh, my goodness, I can't remember.
What's it called?
Shaun of the Dead? No.
Shaun of the Dead, yeah. They're definitely in a shopping center, which is just funny to me because that's a British shopping center and they're very, like, very crap.
Yeah, or there's also Chopping Mall, which is a 1986 horror film where a group of kids get trapped in a mall with a robot that is the security.
I do not want to see that.
Yeah, it's like it's a security robot that's gone mad, so.
That's brilliant. In terms of the mall that you've created, what's your favorite bit of world lore?
The mall's directly inspired by the mall where I live, which is Portland, Oregon. It's called the Lloyd Center. It's actually currently going out of business, and so it is. Tons of shops are closed, and so walking through it, it's just like an echo of what it once was, and I tried to capture that with how I set up this adventure of nice. A mall in decline. Super secret bit of lore is that there is an old mines under the mall, and you know, if you could survive your way down into there, there's some pretty interesting stuff.
Oh, that's gruesome. Is that true?
Not in the one here, but in the one I set up. Okay. You know, I felt like, you know, when you dig deep, you start to uncover horrible and terrible things in horror films or books, and so I decided to.
When I was growing up, I lived in Nottingham in England, and there was a shopping center which used to have the entrance to what's called the Caves of Nottingham, which is like a series of sandstone caves underneath Nottingham where like loads of weird stuff happened in history.
Well, you know.
And it's kind of creepy. So
hey, you know what? I'm going to actually go back and change it. So now that's one of the touchstones.
Oh, please. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, when mines might go out of business and sort of they're there, you can't really just leave them. You do have to build stuff over them.
You do. Yeah.
And that idea of deep veins below the earth that are hidden, and repurposed. It's just has that sort of creepy, you're standing over a vast chasm that you don't even know.
It's all gone a bit dwarven. They dug too deep here, hasn't it?
There's definitely that, like, depending on where you go. So it's the way I wrote it, it's a big mall. It's like 3 floors, millions of square feet. Not all of it is actually written to describe, that would get too unwieldy, but I wrote about 30 different rooms. And then you add, one of the coolest parts to me is you add different shops and things, and you create NPCs at the very beginning to sort of entangle your characters, man, pretty quickly and deeply from the get-go.
So what does it mean that it's been like cast out of time and space, or what is that?
Okay, so yeah.
Not with giving too much away.
The doom clock starts is sort of the thing of when the countdown begins. Something has happened to sort of rip the entire mall away, and so they're trapped under a dome of sort of flesh and sinew, I guess is the best way I'd describe it. I had to figure out a way narratively to keep people trapped, because the thing works because you have everyone trapped in the same space.
Yeah, yeah.
And so figuring that out was pretty key, and then, you know, I came up with the mines, and something's going up on down there, but the characters don't know that unless they investigate. Like I said earlier, Drifting Classroom, which is a manga that is pretty foundational in terms of it's how it inspired future horror manga. So,
okay.
And that had this school that gets ripped out of time and space and sort of like trying to survive and figure out what's going on.
That sounds really weird to me, but also kind of cool. So yeah, I'm very interested in that. I like this idea of sort of collaborative world building built into an adventure module. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I wrote it, right? And then that's one of those things that come up during playtesting, is realizing like how actually fun it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone's been to a mall, right?
Everyone's been to a mall. And so sort of that sitting down and coming up with either places you've worked at before. I ended up playing the game with a bunch of people who've worked at malls, just happened to be, and either they came up with places that they've been, or get very clever and very fun different mall names for shops, and then you create NPCs, like I said, that are connected to your character, which then sort of creates that buy-in early on. You have a reason to be here, and you have people you care about at the mall.
That's pretty cool. Other than that, like, is it fairly system agnostic, or is it tied into a specific system?
Oh, yeah. So I wrote it specifically for Liminal Horror, which was the first game I ever put out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's a modern cosmic horror hack for Cairn.
Mm-hmm.
So it's built on Into the Odd and Nave mechanics, but I wanted to make something that was set firmly in a modern era. And so I eschewed the sort of scars mechanic, and instead added a stress and fallout to it. And so it's fun. I've always had fun running it, and I definitely have fun playing it. There's something special about playing, getting to be a player in a game you wrote.
I mean, not really heard of very much modern flavored OSR stuff, so it's kind of cool to hear a little bit about that. I guess not heard of very much horror flavored OSR stuff either. It always seems like it's kind of gritty or dark fantasy, and maybe it would suit the horror mood really well, because it's all about survival and, you know, sort of gritty realism as well.
Right.
I think that works quite well for horror.
I found it does work well, and that was sort of when I thought about trying to like write my first game, and definitely hacking a game is definitely the way for anyone wanting to start out. Doing a hack of a game is a really great way to start out.
It really is.
Yeah. I would highly recommend it, because especially if it's something that is well vetted and you know the bones are really good, you can then really iterate it to be something unique. And that's what I tried to do with Liminal Horror, and then now the mall as being the first adventure for it.
And you've got that doom clock going on in the background, so I guess that's good for tension. Do you have any other techniques in play that ratchet up the tension as you go through the module?
Oh, yeah. So I added a specific mechanic to this module called Whisper Cards. One of the big things early on when I was like, I want to do the thing, but set in a mall, was figuring out how you create that level of tension or potential tension between players. Sort of, I don't know if you've been replaced or not.
Oh, right. Okay.
Right. And so it went through a ton of iterations of me giving specific statements or telling things. And then we finally, with my playgroups, after a number of times of trying out a few different things, we came up with this, the Whisper Cards, which is narrative triggers. So as people do things, or like if they touch the monster, or they get blood on them, or they get exposed to spores, I hand them a card. I don't know what the card says. Only the player does. And on it are two prompts. They're pretty general, but they're all written to be things that like you would see a character do in a horror film,
yeah.
but then also being interpreted by the other players is this person acting weird or not?
Okay.
So some of them might be like gather weapons or a assert control or question or cues, and then it just prompts the player to do that in a subsequent scene.
That's cool.
Yeah, but hidden in there are at least two that are your character has been replaced.
At least two,
right? You could add more, but and everyone at the table knows that that's a potential, and the only person that knows if they've been replaced or not is the actual player.
Ugh, not even the GM. That's pretty cool. And that's also really dark.
And so it's sort of, you know, can they get through? And there's, I put a place in it where it would prompt everyone to reveal if they've been replaced or not. But I've also had it where, since I leave it open enough, I've had players expose themselves as being replaced at just like the most inopportune time for the party, but in the most fun way. Right, everyone's trying to get through this obstacle and they had already gotten through, and then they explode out into being this fleshless monster, and then it creates a pretty fun table moment.
Yep, that's horrifying. Thanks, like it a lot, I think. So you're itch funding that, you're slow funding it, I guess, if it's a couple of months long. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your crowdfunding campaign?
This is my first ever crowdfunding campaign. I had accrued some personal funds through selling, you know, I partnered with Exalted Funeral to sell Liminal Horror. They published it, and then I also translated it into Japanese. And so I've been saving the money from those things, and then I decided to accelerate my ability to get this done through itch funding.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so it was sort of a mix, right? It's partially self-funded, but like truly the way to make this happen on a quicker timeline was through itch funding. And I laid it out pretty explicitly on the itch funding page, though, that my intent is to always get these things done, and I'm far enough along that they will.
Yeah.
But if we itch fund it, I can do it bigger, I can do it quicker, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So what are you trying to do?
So what we are doing is getting a cover by Zach Hazard, who did the cover for Liminal Horror.
Nice.
Him and I are close. I get to run games for him, and his art is just so evocative. And then I'm getting editing by Vi Huntsman.
Yep.
They do Collabs Without Permission videos, which everyone should watch. And their dev editing has been the most amazing feedback I've ever gotten, and helped me make some really great changes that really elevated the work. And so I'm in the process now of doing those dev edits, and then they are going to copy edit.
Cool.
And so that edition of it with the full edits and copy editing should be coming out within a few weeks.
So you are literally already there. Yeah.
One nice thing about itch funding and that I like is that the funds aren't all or nothing.
Yes.
And so, you know, once I got enough for the editing, I sent it off to editing, and I'm pulling the funds out to be able to pay, so we can like really build it together as the itch funding is happening.
It's really nice. It's a nice method. It works really well for some campaigns. So,
and then lastly is I'm doing internal art with Garbage Goat, which they're one of my close friends. They're in my Tuesday night game group. They've done some internal art for other projects and years back, and so it's going to be fun to do some spot art with them for this, just like truly try to get them some things that are evocative of malls and make like bring you into that setting.
Yeah, that's really good. What can the backers get if they follow along with your campaign?
So at this point right now, the backers will get a PDF version of the current iteration, which is partially through the dev edits, and then once those get done, I continually update it.
Mm-hmm.
They get the web-based, I have the web-based version of the character generator online. I also have a map and character handouts, which are in draft, and then as this gets the edits finish, I will get it laid out and into a PDF that hopefully eventually will go to print.
Oh, amazing. Yeah.
Also an EPUB, because that is for some a more accessible option, and so I always try to make sure I have both options for people.
Oh, big kudos. Yeah, EPUB's really cool. I'm seeing it more often now. And it's, yeah, as you said, it's really good for people who use screen readers. But I mean, other people find it really useful as well. Thanks for that.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a conversation that's been really happening a lot on Twitter specifically, is where I've been seeing it. And so I've been trying to build up, like I said at the top of this, that I do the annotated archives. And I've been trying to build out resources for people to learn about how to make EPUBs pretty easily with a low barrier of entry for them. Hint, it's about using Markdown.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, do this.
Too long, didn't read. It's about using Markdown and then a few different steps after that.
But there's not too much to it. It's cool.
But what people get from the get-go on the itch funding is they get a play-tested thing that works at their table for Liminal Horror. The core game, I bundled it with it, that you could pick that up. But I also have that on the website for free. So there's a fully searchable website people can use.
Fantastic. Well, that sounds really amazing. What are your hopes beyond just funding? You know, if you wildly exceed your initial funding goals.
Oh my gosh, what are my hopes? Well, my hopes would be I have a secret stretch goal of there's yet to be named.
It's not secret anymore, but you know.
Not secret, but an artist to do some pretty cool internal art. So like splash pages for the monster itself. I think that would be really, really exciting to have.
That sounds really cool. What a big reveal, yeah.
And then, you know, being able to put money towards continuing working on the annotated archives and then trying to support other people being able to make games for Liminal Horror, always trying to reinvest any money from the games I make back into the community.
Kick it forward, yeah.
Yeah, either through commissioning others.
Super worthy.
Or helping others, like partnering with them, so.
Amazing. What a nice positive note to end on. So, Goblin Archives, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at goblin_archives on Twitter. I tweet sometimes, my wife will say too much.
Valid.
You can also find all my games at goblinarchives.itch.io. There is also a Liminal Horror website, which you can find easily through those two things, but is too long for me to list. It's using GitHub, so I'm not going to say the hyperlink for you.
Awesome. And I guess all that remains for me to say is thank you very much for coming on Yes Indeed Pod, and fantastically good luck with your crowdfunding campaign.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening, and thanks to Goblin Archives for the interview. As always, you can find all of the links in the episode description. Today's episode is sponsored by Will Lentz of Gamernomicon. Party First is a rules-light tabletop role-playing game for 2-7 players about the horrors of the supernatural and cosmic, but also the human and bureaucratic. It takes its cues from media such as The Thing, Red Dawn, The Fly, The Hunt for Red October, and even Stranger Things, but filtered through an alternate history twist. Party First Twilight War is a supplement book for Party First which expands on the game world with an espionage, James Bond or Jason Bourne inspired focus. Along with new rules for time management and vehicles, it brings new classes, new ways to ratchet up tension, and 2 new adventures in approximately 50 pages. It's the second crowdfunding campaign from Gamernomicon and launches on Kickstarter February 8th, 2022. The pre-launch page is live at bit.ly/twilightwar. To complement the Yes Indeed Pod event, all through February, Yes Indeed Pod is running a Patreon drive. We're trying to hit $200 per month so that we can continue to pay all of our guests as well as hire a podcast transcriber. If you sign up during February, on top of the usual benefits of being a subscriber, you can also get some exclusive merchandise. Sign up at $2 to get a handwritten postcard, as well as regular shoutouts and access to our guest and subscriber Discord server. At $5 per month, you can also join our monthly editing and chat streams, and I'll send you a handwritten greetings card and your choice of Yes Indeed Pod stickers. And at $20 per month, join our book club, where every month you get free PDFs from one of our guests. As well as a greetings card and stickers, you'll also get an exclusive, personalised faux leather bookmark for your RPG reading. So remember, if you love Yes Indeed Pod and want to support what we do and get some exclusive merchandise, be sure to check out patreon.com/yesindeedpod. If you can't commit regularly, you can always help out by rating and reviewing the show wherever you find your podcasts, or by donating through the Ko-Fi page at ko-fi.com/yesindeedpod. Of course, you can always reach out to me through Twitter at yesindeedpod, that's YesIndeedPod. I'd love dearly to hear from you. Lastly, music credits. All music is adapted from Nothing Like Captain Crunch from Slam Funk by Broke for Free, available on the Free Music Archive and released under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 Unported License. Until next time, remember, does indie need you? Yes, indeed.